Good evening, warriors of all ages. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. You know, as we've been doing, we've been working with not only talking about medical issues and environmental issues and everything else, but making your life more full. We've been reading books. We've been talking about everything else. Today, we're going to talk about music. And to help us talk about music, I got my cousin again, Bonnie Rocky. She's going to introduce our guests because they're very special to her. Bonnie, welcome to Warrior Connection again.
Well, thanks, Doug. I'm glad to be back and visit with you. That's
it's always kind of nice.
Thing. Happy early Valentine's Day, by the way.
Hey, thank you very much. Same to you. Well, hey, introduce our guest because, I mean, this is really neat.
Okay. Are you there?
Yes, we are.
Yep. Okay. I just am extremely proud and excited about our guest today. They are called Alchemy, a husband and wife band from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where they perform live 85 to 90% original music. Nancy Habrick is an accomplished songwriter and arranger who solos and is at the keyboard. She has a history of personal music education throughout her life. I am especially proud to introduce Nancy because she was an English student of mine years ago. Bob Danielson, her husband, is extensively educated in music, sings, arranges, plays the drums, and handles percussion. He has taught music for at least 35 years, and today we're going to get to know them and learn how to get into music, how do they write music. And Doug, and ladies and gentlemen, and Radio Land, I introduce you to Alchemy.
Well, hey, welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, this is really unique because, you know, one thing, we've all got medical problems and we've got all kinds of problems with the family, but we have to get on with our life. And so the whole idea and scope of what we've developed under at the Progressive Radio Network under Dr. Gary Knoll is not only nutrition and education, but what else can you do? Well, there isn't anything funner than music. I mean, I can remember when I was a young puppy and we were going out there learning how to do the twist, or we were out there doing the pony or whatever we were doing. Or I know Bonnie and I, we had more than one fun at a, you know, family getting together doing the hokey pokey. But, you know, all this stuff is important. And music brings out the soul for me. It brings out life. Well, that's where we got our guest today. And welcome to Warrior Connection, Nancy, Bob. I mean, tell us a little bit, how did you guys get music? I mean, this is really neat. I'm Nancy, you had Bonnie as a teacher, oh boy, 40 or 50 years ago.
Well, yeah, we're not supposed to say how many years here, but yes, and I remember her very fondly. She was a young, fresh-faced teacher who was very passionate. Of course, I'm looking back over this for many years, but I remember vividly my impressions of her. And I really liked her as a teacher. I really did. Of course, I love reading. I love literature. And so we had very similar, you know, no one had to convince me that I liked learning the subject she was teaching, but she was a very good teacher.
Well, thank you, Nancy.
Yes.
Well, music is what we're about. Music is what we're about now. Hey, how'd you get into music, Nancy?
Well, I have to credit my mother with that, and then she credits my grandpa. My mom, because my grandpa loved music, that's Leonard Hansen from Lancaster, Minnesota, because he loved music so much his whole life, he wanted my mother, his daughter, of course, to learn how to play piano so she could accompany him. And so we had all this sheet music in our house. So I know a lot of popular music from, like, the 20s and 30s because my mom learned to accompany my grandpa. He had a very nice singing voice. And because of that, we always had a piano in the house. And my mom just, we grew up with a piano. I think some other families did, too. So we were encouraged to take music lessons. I could always play by ear. And that's kind of, I have to credit my mom. It just, she had enjoyed that family experience of singing around the piano and playing for someone. So I shared in that, and that's how I was brought up.
That's great. Bob, how did you get into music? I mean, obviously you two are married together. Nancy's from up what we call home in northern Minnesota. Bob, where are you from, and how did you get into music?
I'm a native Californian, but now proud to say I'm an Albuquerquean or a Burke. And I started about sixth grade, and they had a music program at school, and I started playing saxophone, and I lost interest in that and started playing drums in the school band and kept at it. Nobody really knew I was playing drums other than my family and the neighbors, but I kept at it through middle school. And in high school, I was more of an athlete and a academics kind of guy, but I would come home and practice my drum set. So I was kind of a closet drummer for that time, but my parents were supportive and tolerant because there's nothing to whistle along with when you're playing the drums. But I stuck with it as just a hobby, and it eventually became my profession.
So you've been teaching music. Where do you teach in a grade school or a high school, a university, or just professionally? Where do you teach, or all the above?
So, Doug, I've been a private teacher. I did get my master's degree through college, and it turns out that as a professional performer, that's what I am first and foremost. That's how I make my living, primarily, as a performer. But people would approach me and ask about drum lessons, and I found that I enjoyed drum lessons. But no, I did not teach through any school, although I could have qualified. I taught what are called private lessons. That's where you advertise yourself. You hopefully develop a good reputation. People recommend you. And then you either go over to a student's house or they come over to your house. They came over to my house where I would have a, Nancy and I had a music room and a studio set up. And it was good for rehearsing and it was good for teaching. So I had a pretty good reputation as a teacher also. In San Francisco, that's pretty much where I've done a lot of my professional work, based in San Francisco.
Well, that's good. Bob, you've got to speak a little closer to the phone so we can make sure and hear you good.
Okay,
so you're doing all this stuff. I mean, when a person's out there and they want to get into music, okay, obviously there's a whole host of different types of music, okay, different type of instruments. So they have to, you know, obviously select what type of music are they interested in. Or, you know, they can go and, you know, cover all the bases, but again, they have to decide what type of an instrument that they want to learn how to play, if they're going to play an instrument or if they're just going to sing. And so you've got a whole bunch of different types of instruments. So you have, obviously, you know, you got all your different horns, and that's what they call brass or everything. So the trumpet and the cornet and the saxophone and the bugle, all of those things. And then you have percussion, I guess, that would be your drums and everything, correct, and xylophone?
Yes, primarily when people ask about playing drums, they're talking about playing the drum set because they, whether it's a child or an adult, it seems that they're most influenced by the music they're hearing on the radio or on the TV or on the internet. But you're right, there's a whole lot of other percussion instruments would include those that are pitched. Like you mentioned, xylophone and marimba. Well, if someone approached me for those, I would say I can't teach those because I don't have the expertise in them. I do have a music theory degree, but my expertise is in the drum set. And from there, I play a lot of different genres, a lot of different styles of music.
Yeah, so there's a whole group of different music. I mean, obviously, it seems like the instrument of choice that a lot of people will select would be the guitar or a type of guitar, one or the other. I mean, you got the electric guitar. I mean, the guitar that I learned on and can play on, what we got laying around here, or what we call a folk guitar or a Spanish guitar. And then, obviously, you got, you know, the banjo and everything else, and, I mean, just a whole host of different types of instruments similar to guitar. Is there one instrument or a different instrument that's easier to learn how to play than another?
I can address how I got to select the instrument. Well, we had a piano in our house, and I could always play by ear. So for me, that was the easiest to play. I was actually kind of lazy about learning to read music, although I'm really glad I did, because it opens up your opportunities so much. So my easiest selection and first one was piano. But then I think a lot of people, like you were saying, Doug, people see guitar played so much that a lot of people want to pick up and learn guitar, and there's lots of places. There are so many things nowadays since the advent of rock and roll, if you want to say that, that has made guitar so popular that nowadays, you know, and when I was growing up, it would probably have been just learn it yourself. But now you can go to school for rock, and they literally have School of Rock where you can learn to play rock, bass guitar, and set drums. But the other place that kids learn to make a choice is in school bands, and that's where I learned to play French horn. And I'm mentioning that because a lot of kids get their first, aside from the rock and roll thing, which is really big right now for kids to take private lessons and even in the schools, they get introduced in band and chorus to the orchestral band and the things you're mentioning, and usually the band teacher will help them, or in my case, pick out the instruments that they thought would be the best for my embouchure. They looked at, you know, how your lips are shaped, that kind of thing, and say, I think, and of course, they may be missing an instrument, so they'll tell the person, that's what you're good at. So they have to get the bassoon in there somewhere and get someone to play it, that I love bassoon.
Nancy. You guys can have to speak up a little closer to the phone, a little louder. Is there any particular age? I mean, obviously here, you know, we're talking about veterans are going to be in their 18, 90, 20s, 30, 40s, 50s on up. I mean, they can be playing. But if they got kids or grandkids, they could also get them involved in playing. Is there any specific age where, you know, you look at where you can start teaching a kid how to play music or how to learn? Because obviously you can go to 101 and whatever. But what's the youngest age where, you know, it's easiest for the child to start picking up music?
In my experience, somebody older than 10, but I have taught children as young as 6, and it's a different experience. You can't be too rigid, and you can't be too organized. Because that child will get bored if you've got an agenda and you're trying to stick with it. But let me also say it's just not too late. It's never too late to consider playing an instrument. Because like you said, Doug, you can play with family and friends, and of course you can play by yourself too. And that's all the fulfillment you need. It never has to be some kind of public stage or professional aspiration. Music is very rewarding just for its own sake.
Well, sometimes, I mean, we hear the tunes, and you guys always already made the distinction, playing by ear. What does playing by ear mean, and what does that entail?
Playing by ear means that you can, very literally, you could hear something on the radio, or someone could sing something, and depending on what instrument you play, I'll just pick piano because that's what I played, I could sit down and figure out how to play it with just by having heard it. Nobody told me the notes. I didn't look at sheet music. That's the simple definition, and I could easily do that. It's something that I personally think more people can do, but sometimes they get kind of taught out of it that they don't, I don't know. I was encouraged to play piano, but that was something that, well, I don't know. Some people say it's like a gift that you could play by ear, but I personally think I could probably sit down with just about anybody and help them learn how to play by ear just by listening to what they, and then playing the notes on an instrument that you heard.
That has always fascinated me. I could never figure that out, as how you could play by ear and just sit down and figure out those were the right notes to play. Mm-hmm. And another thing I'm really interested in is how do you write a song? I mean, it has to be a gift that melody comes to you. I can write poetry, and it's a gift, but how do you write music?
Bonnie, we were going to play some music today, and our little cell phones just moiterized the sound of it. So I would answer that by saying I originally started writing poetry, not so much thinking of music, but there's a cadence and a feel and word selection that I know you are well aware of. You're an award-winning poet. And that's what one thing that attracted me to poetry was to make a very concise statement, trying to capture an experience of something that affected me or something I had feelings about. So I originally started writing poetry. Would this be a good time to perform my rap song, Straight Outta Kitson?
Yes.
It's poetry, and it's like...
I know, and Bonnie knows, that Kitson's up in northwest Minnesota, correct?
Oh, yeah. It's way up there. You know, it's Straight Outta Kitson. I tell people I'm almost Canadian. It's and just for people who have historical interest, I looked up some things before I wrote this song. People may want to look up the medicine line, and when I say 1879 in the poem, what I'm referring to is Kitson County was established in 1879, either 1878 or 79. I've read two different accounts. So those are the two references, and it's cold up there. As Bonnie knows, she lived up there. And should I just launch into my song?
That'd be fantastic. Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, the world premiere of Out of Kitson. Go ahead. You guys got the floor.
Okay. I'm going to come off. Am I off speakerphone here? Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. This we do perform as music. Like I say, when we tried to play the music over our cell phones, it moiterized it. So I'll give you the poetry out of the song. It's called Straight Out of Kitson. I'm straight out of Kitson, 1879, where the Red River crosses the medicine line. Minneapolis has Prince, Duluth has Dylan, Kitson has me, and I'm more than willing to tell you about it. I'm straight out of Kitson, land of ice and snow, no hot springs, but the river does flow north, just like the last glacier, and I can take the cold. I'm straight out of Kitson. The catfish ain't jumping, but when the river jumps its banks, it's really something. It spreads far and wide. This country is flat from old Lake Agassiz when she rolled back after the last ice age. And I can take the cold. Well, I'm straight out of Kitson, where gumbo means dirt, black and rich like the buffalo herds. Things move slow before cars and rails, two oxen, two wheels on the Pembina Trail. Tall prairie grasses were all plowed down to make farms, cities, and towns. And I can take the cold. I'm straight out of Kitson by way out of California. Now I'm in Duke City, and I gotta warn you, you take it with you wherever you go.
That's really good. Are you there?
Fascinating.
I could just see it and live it.
We're looking at this. I mean, Bonnie's got her Margaret series of books and her poetry. I mean, obviously, you had some influence. You're looking at almost something like A House on the Prairie. But also, you got this whole, through the music and the other music you get, and you've got this family tie. I mean, you know, it can bring families together and everything else, and it can get a child and a father or a child and a mother. I mean, just giving some time together where they're enjoying things. I know in my house, we've always had a piano and we've always had a guitar. You know, and the grandkids, I mean, they come in here and they get to the piano or the organ and they turn it on, and even the three-year-old, four-year-old is just enjoying it completely. It's funny how... is there something there when they're making music that the child or the adult, they just kind of start happening? I mean, there's magic there, isn't there?
I wonder if we lost them, Doug.
Are you there, Nancy and Bob? Okay, hopefully they'll call back in.
Yeah. Well, there has to be. I mean, I play clarinet. You're back.
Okay. Oh, yeah, sorry about that. When I guess you lost us at a point back, where were we?
I thought you had finished the song, had you?
Yep, we're fine with it.
Yep, we were saying that was really good, and Doug was saying that there's something about that area that we all share, you know, and like you said, you always take it with you wherever you go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, I feel that way, and I feel that I had a wonderful childhood. But, you know, Doug was talking about the age of kids playing music, and Bob was talking about that a little bit. I don't think there's any age that's too young. When I took piano lessons from my wonderful teacher, Mrs. Paul Lutz, in Hallock, Minnesota, she had me teaching her daughter, who was 3-year-old, to just sit at the piano and do very simple things. So even, you know, and our son would climb up on the drum set when he was a year and a half and try to play. So I don't think there's a too young of an age. If kids show any interest in it, it is exciting for them. And like, as you know, Bob, as a teacher, you would have to adjust your teaching methods. But I started my son when he was like 4 or 5. I mean, he took other lessons from someone else too. But just to sit down and show him, you know, just play and goof around and show him how his hand goes on the keys. And I think the same thing for anyone. I don't think you have to be, you could be a toddler and goofing around with a little instrument.
And they're singing. So, of course, we see children sing a lot just, you know, when they're in kindergarten or preschool or just at home. So singing is always something to be encouraged. And, you know, there's any child can try their best at singing, and that's a great experience, and they should just get used to it.
I know we've got an organ here in the living room, and I mean a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old grandson. I mean, just have a field day with that. I mean, and it's so strange because when they're up there playing and hitting the notes, after a few minutes, they're literally putting stuff together where they know, okay, this sound came from here. Now I'm going to do that again. And then after a little while, it actually sounds pretty darn good. And then, I mean, the older ones just have a field day. It seems like most songs, I'm going back to remember my rock and roll days and, you know, folk music days. I mean, that's where I'm into. And then obviously Broadway show tunes. But most songs and everything, they're only 2 or 3 minutes in length, are they? Aren't they? And just kind of like repeat the same thing over and over or have a catchy phrase?
Yeah, a lot of them do. Yeah, that's a standard, in quotes, pop song. It is, and that developed through, I don't know the politics of it, but that developed through radio formats. I imagine what came out. They are 2 to 3 minutes. There are exceptions. There are artists who made albums with long, long, long jams or long songs, but that's the standard pop tune is 2 to 3 minutes. Maybe it's the attention span. I don't know.
Now, when the individual puts together a song or they write a song, it seems like in most cases, I mean, you go to church or whatever, you'll see the same music for different stanzas or different verses. So what does happen? Does a person write the words first and then comes up with the music, or do they write the music and then come up with the words, or does it happen all at once? Is it kind of magic or, what? You know?
Well, it is kind of magic. It is kind of magic. I just read something about Bruce Springsteen, a quote from him where he was saying, I kind of pull something out of the ether and write it down on paper, and now it exists, and it is kind of magic. But a writer would have that same experience. I was thinking of Bonnie's poetry. Sometimes it starts usually with me that a feeling that I've had some experience or feelings that I want to express. And for me, I've always enjoyed writing, so I would try to put my feelings down on paper. That was probably how I started with poetry, Then with music, and I was thinking this might apply to veterans in particular, there were feelings I couldn't articulate verbally that I could express on the piano. And there are things in music that are very abstract, that are hard. You don't really know what necessarily the composer is expressing, but I know personally I couldn't say some of those feelings, but I could put them down on playing the piano. And that was very therapeutic for me at some times in my life when I just couldn't talk to people or I couldn't just come up with the words for it. I could sit down. I think some other people have that experience too, where music will, they'll be able to express some things through music that just, there may not be words for, or you just haven't been able to figure out what those words might be.
Well, for some poetry, melodies are really mournful and some are really happy and light. And I can see that. You could do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sad, some tunes are sadder than others, and yeah, you don't have to
certainly
think of the words. You could just think of the feelings, probably.
That's true. And there's a whole history of instrumental music going back centuries that evokes feelings in people, and that's all that needs to be accomplished right up to the present, instrumental music.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, Doug, it's kind of all three. Once in a while, we'd sit down, and I would just accidentally be goofing around, come out with some nice chords and say, oh, I really like that, and then I might try to find words to go with it. Or I could be writing some poetry and then sit down and trying to find music to go with that, and sometimes it would just kind of, like you said, kind of come at the same time. And there is a mystery to that. I think if you, it's kind of a weird thing because it seems easy to me. I've never had writer's block. Ideas seem to come easily to me, but I think a person who wants to learn to write music or poetry and music, if they just got some maybe basic instrument lessons and get a teacher who encourages you to improvise or to express yourself, not just to learn, you know, there's many different ways to learn. But I think some of that could be taught, and it's the more you do it, the more ideas you get.
Well, it seems like, you know, we go back to everything when, you know, when we were all kind of growing up, everything, obviously the sound of music was the key musical, I mean, forever and ever and ever. And, you know, Do Re Mi, obviously the song that everybody learned from and everything. But, you know, just being able to read a little music when we're involved in productions or whatever, musicals or theater or whatever, or listen to the music. Most of the time when you're playing, and again, this is where you have to know the English language and know your words and your vocabulary, because in most senses, don't you have a specific note for a specific syllable in a word usually? And then you're picking out the notes to make that word or that sound have some meaning or tie together with the other ones?
Yes, and like when you were mentioning the church verses, I'm not sure how the original person that wrote them, but you'll notice that when you're singing in church, sometimes, like say you're on verse 3, the words have to kind of be rushed to get them into that one phrase, or you have to spread it out, and they have to make it rhyme.
Now, the other thing, and playing the piano, I guess, there's some people, and obviously we've all been around, where somebody can just play the melody and usually be right hand most of the time just playing the melody. But then when you look at the music on a page, sometimes you have the simple music where it's a melody only. But then you'll have the other music where they get the other hand going through a whole bunch of gyrations and everything else, and then filling in music. So that becomes that full, thorough, I mean, profound sound, I guess. I mean,
Yeah.
Can you describe that a little bit better, please?
That is true. Someone can transcribe a melody and actually sing or play. You know, singing is kind of, I would guess, the first instrument that people would have come out with before they started playing other instruments. Once you'll see on a composition where there's more than just a melody line, the notes are stacked up vertically. And that's may or may not include a melody. I mean, there's a lot of different variation in that, but it's a melody will go along horizontally, the notes, just defining what the phrase is, like da-da-da-da-da, there's a little short phrase, whereas I can't sing polyphony, which would be several tones stacked up vertically, but of course on not every instrument, as I think about it, there's some notes that only can, instruments that can only play one note. So you have to combine a bunch of instruments to get the chords, but on piano and guitar and some other stringed instruments or keyboards, you play several notes at the same time, polyphony.
Doug?
Now, obviously, you know, when we've auditioned for a separate performance, they'll have the term, they have octave, and then the other talk, what is your range? What are they talking about there?
Your range is kind of, it is where, let's say, between the lowest note and the highest note you can sing. And sometimes the lowest note and the highest note might not sound very good. That's where opera singers have the most extreme developed voices. They might have a tremendous range from the lowest note they can sing to the highest, and you'll hear these extremely high sopranos. It's like most people can't do that. But some, just even if you're listening to the tone of my voice right now, and then I'm listening to yours, you have a lower tone when you speak, Doug, and so your range will be lower. There's different, in music when there's vocal singing, sometimes they split it out like soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and that's your range, that the bass usually, will be the lowest notes in the scale that are sung, and typically that'll be men, whereas the higher notes often will be women. And it's just that's kind of the way we're made.
Yeah, one thing is we've had a lot of fun before, and I've had so many musicals, whether they did The Wizard of Oz or Princess and the Pea, I was in the world premiere of 1787, and we're getting ready to resurrect that again. That'll be at they're resurrecting the Homer Opera House in Homer, Illinois, and that'll be one of their premier productions, 1787. But that whole cast, they had obviously the whole range and the musical productors and the directors and everything. I mean, we're talking about world-class producers and directors from the University of Illinois. And they put everybody together. So, yeah, you might have all these different ranges. We have a bass, and we have the baritone, and we have the tenor, and we have all the way sopranos and everything, and the alto, and the whole thing. And when they put the whole music together, the sound that comes out is just absolutely incredible. Because
it's
seems like,
thrilling.
Even though you have the bass is going up and down
symphony.
In music. Pardon?
I love going to a symphony for that reason, or opera, because when you're sitting in the audience, you can feel the vibrations of the music come through you. And it's a thrilling experience. It feels great.
You organized your band first in San Francisco, didn't you, Nancy?
Yes, I put an ad. I moved out there. I put an ad in the paper looking for an original music drummer. And because every band I've been in, although we played a lot of top 40 is how, in the age I was in, that's how you would make you could either play top 40 country western or top 40 rock. The clubs were kind of split into two categories. And so that's how you made your living, was by going out and working up a bunch of cover tunes, meaning you learn other people's music. But in every band I was in, we always had people who were interested in playing originals. So I've been very fortunate that way. I've always worked with people who played or wrote songs, so we would always mix those in. So when I moved to San Francisco, that's why I was looking for a drummer for an original music band. I decided that's what I wanted to do. Bob Danielson answered the ad, and I still have that letter. We go back and enjoy that story. Then we met a couple times over the next few years, and of course I'm veering off into our how we got married and everything, but it was with music is what brought us together originally.
That's fascinating. How big of a band have you played in? I mean, most bands, I mean, the one you currently have, Alchemy, is that just the two of you, or do you have others in the band with you? Or
that's just the two of us, but Bob could speak to this, too. I've probably played in about 30 bands, and some of them have lasted as long as maybe a couple years, some of them not as long. But, you know, that's kind of the life of when you're playing top 40 bands. Tend to some people have the same people they've played with for 30 years, but my experience was that bands tend to break up and then you form into another one. And but that's, you know, that's history.
You were getting going when there is some great music out there too, though. I think in the 60s,
yeah.
70s there were some great top 40s.
Yeah, there were, and I have to say, Doug, I used to do the hokey pokey, and then I turned myself around.
Hey, Bonnie, I mean, going back to when we were little, if I seem to remember, your dad or my uncle had an incredible singing voice. Isn't that correct?
Yes, he could sing opera, and he would sing to us when we go check the fields.
Oh, my goodness.
The potato field, and he'd sing something in an operatic voice, some silly song or something, but he had a lot of throat trouble, and that kind of took it from him. But when he was young, he sang in choir and choruses and everything. And as far as I know, he was the only one that had the music until, you know, his grandson and granddaughter, you know, great-granddaughter, my brother's son's daughter has an opera scholarship at the University of Minnesota. So that's kind of cool.
Well, yeah, that must have been really rather exciting when people are out working and you hear this exceptional voice singing along. That's a wonderful way to work.
Yeah. Well, I think he just used it for us girls, probably, when he'd talk us into going out to the fields with him, and then he'd sing to us.
Oh,
but that
man.
Was fun. A good memory of him.
Yeah, and you know he enjoyed it. It really is kind of a connection and a communication. You can bet he enjoyed that. And listen to how you're talking about it now, Bonnie. It's a very special memory.
Do you remember the song Barney Google?
Yep.
He sang that in opera.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Barney!
Yeah, he just barreled it out in that old car of ours. That's the one thing I remember, Barney Google with the googly, googly eyes. And he'd have this baritone voice, and oh my.
Are you familiar with Spike Jones and his orchestra from the 30s and the 40s?
I have listened to him, yeah.
They're wonderful musicians. I really like their music. And you'll find they'll be singing in operatic style some silly words. But it's really entertaining, and that's just another genre of music. And those musicians are exceptional.
Yeah.
Well, I think you'll find out, and the experience I've had with some of these, you know, professional musicians that come and visit at the college, university, or anything we've been involved in theater, their range of music goes all over the place. So, I mean, they might be doing rock and roll, and the next second they can break into a full operatic solo, or they can, I mean, do jazz or wherever you want to be. So, I mean, once you've learned music, can't you just branch out all the way across depending on what you feel like?
No, you have to work at certain genres because they have their particular identity and their particular requirements. But isn't it wonderful when you see somebody walk up to the piano and they may look like a punk, and you don't know what they're going to play. Expect it to be something rock and roll. And isn't it nice when they suddenly go into a show tune, or they're playing symphonic music or something like that? It just tells you, you can't judge the musician by their looks. And so you're right. That same, you know, one person will be in a rock band, and the next week, you might see them in a musical, And and it's a wonderful discovery. I always like it when I discover somebody who's in one genre happens to be very knowledgeable and accomplished in another genre.
I don't know if you heard that song now that David Bowie passed away, but he did this duet with Bing Crosby, this Christmas song.
I've heard
and
that.
It's just beautiful. He's singing Peace on Us, and Bing Crosby is singing Little Drummer Boy, and they put it together. And that's a real surprise, you know, hearing them sing together, because
but
David Bowie was rock.
I'm a real fan of David Bowie's, and I've seen that video. It's on YouTube for everyone to listen to. And another example of something like that, who is the singer who did I Left My Heart in San Francisco? I forget his name. Tony Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware? Do you know who Lady Gaga is?
Yeah.
She has done, in the past 2 years, she has done a whole duet album with Tony Bennett. And it's not just a one-trick pony. She is very accomplished in his style. And
they're
so that
good
was
together.
A nice discovery.
They're really good together.
You know, all the music
it's
is fascinating.
Chemistry.
We've been lucky here because at the University of Illinois, we got not only U of I, but then we got the incredible Virginia Theater here, which it goes back to 1921. But the Beach Boys were here, and then we also had the privilege of also having Celtic Women were here. And now we're looking up here in the next week or two, we're going to have the Million Dollar Quartet. And then we had a whole Irish music thing, and we're going across the whole thing, and you can sit there, and the enjoyment of just listening to the music is incredible. But then also, anybody can, like you said, can get the opportunity to participate in the music, and I mean, it can really soothe the savage beast, can't it?
Yes. Yep, and it's a good thing, you know, when. One reason we love music and we surrounded our son with it, we have one son, but didn't push him into it. But one thing, when kids get to be teenagers, it's really good for them to have things that they're proud of, that they can do. And music is great for that. Keep them in band, keep them in chorus, keep them busy so they don't have time to get into trouble. But it gives them a real sense of accomplishment. There's, if they like it, there's usually progress and goals to meet. And you meet a goal, and then you get a little better. And music is very emotionally satisfying when you reach a certain, I'm trying to remember as being a complete beginner when I just played by ear, I liked it. It was fun. And it was just rewarding to sit there and be able to remember what I heard and then play it. But if you, supposing you can't play by ear, just learning to play an instrument, I think, is really fun. It really appeals to me. There's a discipline to it, but there's this great emotional satisfaction of accomplishment and making something beautiful that's just expresses yourself.
And I want to say something for men and women veterans. They have an instrument. It is their voice. And so they needn't be intimidated by thinking, oh, an instrument means I've got to take lessons to play whatever it might be, keyboard, guitar, whatever. They should first of all consider singing. And they'll have to look around, but there may be opportunities where they could fit right in with a community organization, for example, where you don't have to be professional. You just have to show up and work with the others, and it's very rewarding.
What is life as a professional musician? Obviously, I mean, for me, you know, I've been having a teacher and everything, and my first class was at the start of 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning, so I'm getting up at 6:30 or 7 in the morning and boogieing in the teach or working the lab or what do you have. And then you get done, you know, maybe 4 or 5 in the afternoon, maybe 6, maybe you have an evening class and you're done with that. But as a professional musician, obviously you're going to be playing in the evenings or from whatever. Most things, what, start maybe 7 o'clock on to, what, midnight or something?
And yes,
what
I'm all.
What lifestyle is that? Where do they? They've got to, they got there and do it professionally, but then don't you have to practice a lot too?
Yes, you do have to practice, and in the band, there's an individual practice. Like I'll speak as a top 40 musician where I made money for a long time. The basic reality of it is that when I had to work two jobs, I could make enough money as a top 40 musician. We played, when I was in one of the most active bands, we played like five nights a week, usually from 9 to 1. So I would work a day job, as people would call it, and I would try to cut back my hours. This is how I did it anyway. If I could get a 6 or 7 hour day job so that I'd have health insurance and make sure I had enough money to pay rent, then I would go off and play music at night. So my typical schedule would be to get up in the morning, go to a day job, then go out at night and play, take naps in the afternoon, or say after I got home from working my day job, I would then have time to take a nap and get out. But there also are rehearsals. And so we would end up rehearsing with the band that was playing 5 days a week. We got so we knew the song so well, we didn't rehearse much. But if you're playing maybe once or twice a week, then you would schedule another, usually an evening, for a rehearsal. So bottom line, most of the time I had to work two jobs to do it.
What are you doing now? I mean, you are performing in Albuquerque, from what I understand. And what kind of a regular schedule do you have there? Sounds
okay.
Like you're doing pretty well, according to what I've heard on Reverb Nation and on Facebook and everything.
Well, we're happy but not content with our progress at this point. Now we're completely professional musicians, meaning Nancy doesn't have a day job. For most of my life, I've worked as a professional drummer. And I'll just leave it at that. But now what we do is we have a house in Albuquerque, and I wake up at around 7 with thoughts of music in my head, usually. And we address music every day. Right now we're doing some recording in our home studio, but we also take care of the business side of things. And that's where you make calls and you try to cultivate new places to play. And we're making progress. And we rehearse a lot because we're always trying to do a song. We discover little things about a song which we can improve upon. And then, as Nancy will attest, I practice quite a lot still. I enjoy just playing my drums. So that's what we're doing in Albuquerque. The biggest performance coming up right now that I can think of is we have a concert at the Albuquerque Museum coming up on the 27th of February.
That sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. When you're looking at music, obviously a professional musician, you can have a song, and then you can do an arrangement. What does that mean for people that are unfamiliar with it?
An arrangement means how you put the song together. Like, I'll just pick Proud Mary. There's a verse that's usually telling a story. And then there's what I would call the chorus, where everyone's singing, rolling, rolling, rolling on a river. That song could be arranged a lot of different ways. You could have the pieces of how you put it together. Usually people do it kind of like they've heard it done before. But you could say, tell the guitarist, you started out, then I'm going to come in, 5 measures in with a little bit of a drum solo, and I want the singer to start. So it's how you lay out the parts, the progress of the song. So, yeah, Bob has something to say here.
Well, you know, the original of Proud Mary, which is the song some people call Rollin' on the River, that was by Creedence Clearwater, correct?
Yep.
And
Vietnam era.
Have you heard? And then there was another version of it that became very popular also. It was another arrangement of it by Ike and Tina Turner. Do you remember that arrangement of the same song?
Yeah, saw all of them in person at one time.
Ooh.
So those two examples of the same song are what you were asking about, Doug, is you have the original from Creedence, and now we are also aware of the Ike and Tina Turner version, which starts out slow and rough.
They always say on Idol, make it your own, so
yes,
don't copy the original.
The arrangement can refer to instrumentation, who sings when the guitar player comes in, whether, you know, what types of instruments you put in. So it can refer to quite a lot of things. There are some very famous people who arrange other people's music. I think one of them would be, an example would be Nelson Riddle, who was one of Frank Sinatra's. He loved Nelson Riddle's arrangements, and he used him extensively. And then Linda Ronstadt came out and did a whole album that Nelson Riddle did the arrangements behind it, meaning he put together, you know, the strings. He made a very lush sound for Linda Ronstadt for one of her albums. So he was a superb arranger who could take a song and put it together with different instrumentation for different artists. But he had his own style, and like Bonnie was saying, people probably would recognize Nelson Riddle arrangements once he's become well-known. Of course, being with Frank Sinatra would help you become well-known. But he had his own kind of trademark style of how he did things, but he could arrange for different artists, too. So he was one of those people that's kind of in the background. But when Bob and I arrange something, we just very basically decide, how are we going to start it out? How long is the verse? How long is the chorus? When are we going to put a drum solo in or not? That kind of thing. So you kind of talk it through.
Hey, Doug. One example of our treatment of our own arrangement of a well-known song is Frank Sinatra's song called It Was a Very Good Year. And by the way, did you know that a folk singer wrote that song? Anyways, Frank Sinatra made that song famous. I like that song, so I turned it into a tango, which I sing. There's an example of an arrangement of a popular song, which Alchemy often puts its own stamp on someone else's song.
Is that one recorded, Bob? Have you recorded that?
Yes. Yes. But it's not on the internet yet.
What?
But I love playing that song because it's got this regal march to it, and I like the words. I have recorded Nancy and I have been recording these past 10 days, and we have done the instrumentation for that song, and the next thing to do is for me to put my vocals to it.
And,
so you're compiling the whole thing separately or piece by piece then?
Well, we have a home studio and we're having to do certain things. It's not, you know, the type of studio where you can mix every individual track separately, but we've developed a method at home. Bob's the engineer, and first we put the instrumental tracks together playing live, so we have to play through the whole arrangement. Then we put the vocals on. So it's not as complicated as in a high-end studio with 20 tracks, but we're getting a very good result. But we have to do a good performance all the way through the way we're doing it, and so that takes some work preparing for it.
Yeah, it's unforgiving.
Yeah, it's unforgiving.
If we make a mistake, we got to start over again. So with our little home studio and the technology that we have to give it a sufficiently good performance, or else we got to start back from scratch again and try again.
Wow.
Yeah. That kind of
Nancy,
says it
were
all
you going to read? Oops. Were you going to read Postcard Home, or?
I will do that, and I wanted to tell people they can, actually I will sing that a cappella. People can,
okay, fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Postcard Home by Alchemy.
Yeah, okay, here we go.
Give me a second here to go off speakerphone.
Can you still hear me?
Yep.
I have to get my pitch. This is something, I think the music and words kind of came to me at the same time. And it's the title track from our Postcard Home CD, which you can hear on Reverb Nation if you look us up under Alchemy. And it's spelled with an I-E at the end. So let me get my pitch again. Postcard home, a small piece of my life. A few short words blowing in like a breeze from the sea. Small address, small town a long ways away. My loneliness, I'm chasing it here by the sea, and I know you would like to see me. Postcard home, tattered and torn is my life. At journey's end, you must read between the lines. My time there only exists in my mind. I love you, but I'm not coming home this time. From the sea, a footfall in the stubble in the field, the heat waves in the sky like a lake. Night flows and the woods are alive with the sound of the song in my heart. Sunset burn up the sky, the dust rising high in the field, day after day till winter closes in and the cold winds blowing again. Postcard home, just a piece of my life, a few short words, a small address. By the sea, by the sea.
That's it.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the time is up. Thank you very much. Again, the idea is get music into your life. We've had a nice conversation how you can bring music in to help you get over your life and move on. Thank you, and God bless and everything. Have a good evening. Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Nancy.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you.